KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.
Broadcasting live from South Napa Century Center.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
You will love the staff at Abide Napa Cannabis Dispensary, now open in Napa. The Abide staff's understanding of the medical properties of cannabis enable them to expertly consult patients to the optimum recommendation, free of any intimidation. Their mission is simple: provide patients with the highest quality cannabis products at a fair price. Visit AbideNapa.com or call their experts at 707-266-1967. That's 266-1967. Cannabis expertise, way different than the year 1967.
I met Lee and his wife at Bottle Rock after I saw him dancing at Silent Disco. When I was ready to buy a house, I messaged Lee via Facebook. Within minutes, I got a reply. Lee is so knowledgeable about the homes and neighborhoods in Napa, sharing info I hadn't even thought about. Lee made home buying fun, and he worked his negotiating magic. I highly recommend Lee W. Miller as a realtor.
Change is never easy, but most change has the potential to bring about huge innovation. And for the real estate industry, other than the use of the internet and about 10 times the amount of forms filed, the way brokerages operate hasn't changed much at all in the last 50 years, until now. Q Avenue 8, a real estate brokerage built for the modern world. Whether you're an agent or a client, it's time to experience a brokerage that makes real estate simple, seamless, and built for people. Avenue 8 is a thoughtfully designed brokerage designed to equip and empower agents with the technology and tools they need to be effective and successful in their careers, ultimately bringing superior results to the home buyers and sellers. I'm happy to put you in touch with the right folks at Avenue 8. Check out LeeWMiller.com or 707-266-1585.
It's time for All Things Napa with your host, Lee W. Miller, a community leader, full-time realtor, and a serial networker passionate about promoting local businesses. Let's learn what's new in the Napa business scene today.
Yes, let's learn what is new. I know we have a full house today. I am Lee W. Miller, and if you are new to this broadcast, thank you for joining us. A little bit of background on this particular show. I am a full-time realtor. I am only 1 hour a week on the radio, but I've been doing it for a couple of years now, having fun. And my show primarily exists to promote local businesses. That's why I'm here. And when I'm not donating my time and talent, if you can go that far with me talking on the radio, helping other businesses promote themselves, I am that full-time realtor. And this particular episode is not the normal format where I have two businesses in. Every once in a while, we depart from that normal format, and sometimes we talk about community issues. And the issue at hand today that we will start with is Picasso, the fractional ownership company, and we will be talking with David Applebaum about that. And we'll also be talking with Ryan O'Connell, howtoadu.com. So kind of real estate related, which is a departure from normal, because normally I hardly ever talk about real estate. And if it wasn't for that great introduction by Lauren, most people wouldn't know that I am, in fact, a full-time realtor and past president of the Napa Association of Realtors. and a son of a real estate broker, and I got my degree in business in real estate. So it's not like just a hobby for me. It's kind of the real deal. With no further ado, let's just jump right into things. And we decided, who won the coin toss?
I did.
Okay. David Applebaum.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you so much, Lee. You're very appreciated.
Oh, sure enough. So one other thing I want to mention is, I am not a journalist. I think I've made that pretty clear in my introduction. But if I was a journalist, I would be of the old school Walter Cronkite type of journalist that reports the information and doesn't editorialize like basically all journalists do today. So we are going to have a polite and respectful conversation. Absolutely. I had a representative from Picasso in here, and I got a little bit of hate mail about that. And I don't care. What do they say? Any PR is great PR. I don't know about any mail, hate mail included, being good mail, but I'm happy to provide you with a platform. And again, I'm just going to be neutral and we'll go from there. So for maybe the two people listening that don't know what Picasso is, and I don't want to take too much time on the backstory, but go ahead and provide us your perspective as to who Picasso is.
Sure, absolutely. And first of all, thank you very much both for your neutrality and for providing us a forum as well. It's very appreciated, and we really respect both you, your program, and your neutrality, because at the end of the day, that's all we're asking for.
Exactly, yeah.
So Picasso, in our opinion, is essentially a venture-backed startup company that has essentially rejiggered the timeshare model, wrapped it in an app, and essentially opened up single-family homes within neighborhoods to be timeshared across 8 anonymous owners that utilize an app to then schedule it and then be able to claim that they're now a unicorn in terms of their overall valuation. We view that very similarly to the issue that came with WeWork, where essentially WeWork was a real estate company for office real estate that claimed it was a unicorn, tried to IPO, and the whole thing was pretty much a disaster. We see very similar aspects of that with Picasso, and more importantly, though, the negative effects aren't limited to commercial real estate. They are limited exclusively to residential neighborhoods and single family homes. And we're in the midst, as we all know, in Napa and Sonoma counties, of a tremendous housing crisis where the availability of affordable housing is incredibly limited. It's incredibly difficult to find a single family home that is affordable within a reasonable neighborhood with a reasonable school. And the further diminishment of that inventory, either through Airbnb vacation rentals or Picasso sales, really creates a significant degrading effect on our neighborhoods. We simply cannot afford to bring in revolving door hotels into the neighborhoods where we all live, where we go to school, where we pay our taxes, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know about you, but personally, I don't like having 12 anonymous people cycling through my neighborhood every week. And that's exactly what ultimately Picasso does. They claim that it's co-ownership. At the end of the day, we say, look at the terms, look at the information. It's timeshare, no matter how you slice it.
Okay. That's a good introduction that covers probably my next two questions. You're very efficient, David. So I guess the response that some might give to that is, why shouldn't people think that you and those that are opposed to Picasso or just a bunch of rich NIMBYs?
Sure. You have to look at the neighborhoods where these houses are, right? If you look in St. Helena, if you look in Sonoma, where several of these houses were purchased, these were all, you know, what I would say, very reasonable middle-class neighborhoods. You know, unfortunately, we live in an expensive area. You know, average housing prices hovers around the $1 million mark. Unfortunately, there's no way around that simply because of supply and demand. However, when you look at the neighborhoods where these houses are, you're looking at basic middle-class houses. What has happened is flippers come in, they buy the house, they fix it up, they flip it to Picasso, which then pays over market rate for those houses, which in turn creates incredible upward pressure on the real estate market within a very normal, very middle-class neighborhood. We had one house in San Helena that was owned by, you know, a school custodian at $1.4 million that then flipped over $3 million simply because of what was done, you know, some minor fixes that then went to Picasso. And then divided up across eight into higher level timeshares. So two things, right? Number one, once it is a Picasso house, it is never going back to a single family home, right? It has taken that house off of the market. Secondarily, the other houses now in that neighborhood have a significant price premium that's been placed on their house. And one could say, oh, well, good for them. You know, they can make some money on it. But at the end of the day, it creates discontinuity within the neighborhoods. Right? How do you maintain neighborhood cohesion when now all of a sudden all of these houses are getting priced out of existence? You no longer have a nice, calm neighborhood. You now have set up where fixed flippers are going to come in, buy the houses, and begin to start to diminish the entire neighborhood. I mean, I can tell you from my own experience, I live in a cul-de-sac in Sonoma. Three of the 12 houses that are in my neighborhood are now vacation rentals. They were sold to flippers. Flippers went ahead, fixed them up, sold them out above market. And it's eating at the soul and the fabric of our neighborhood.
Interesting that the flippers are doing that as opposed to Picasso.
Mm-hmm. The flippers do it and then sell to Picasso.
Right.
So there's an informal agreement among several flippers that ensure that the houses are done and sold directly to Picasso. Picasso doesn't do any flipping itself, doesn't do any, you know, it does do some of the modifications once they buy the house, but they tend to work hand in glove with the flippers to get the houses.
Interesting. Okay. So are there competitors to Picasso? Why the target on Picasso's back as opposed to, you know, whether there are competitors? I'm not sure that there are.
Yeah, at this point, you know, it's interesting. There's two other companies that have come up, one out of Mexico that's doing the same thing around luxury vacation rentals, and another one, I believe, that's out of Europe that's also coming into the U.S. that's also doing it. The key, I believe, here is that after several years of Airbnb and VRBO, people are sick of it. You know, plain and simple, there are too many, you know, the whole vacation rental, transient occupancy vacation rentals have just gotten out of control in terms of their number. I mean, there was a study done now in Healdsburg that said not only is one in four houses now going into vacation rentals, 87% of all rentals in vacation rentals in Sonoma County are illegal. Meaning the number is actually much higher than one in four. And the challenge is without proper legislation, without proper rules enforcement, which Sonoma and Napa counties lack in dealing with these vacation rentals, neighborhoods are sick of it. They're tired of the revolving door. They're tired of the noise. They're tired of the parking. They're tired of the traffic. They're tired of the cars in the lot. And Picasso coming along and now saying, hey, we're here, deal with it. That was just a bridge too far. You know, we're finally at a point where said, enough is enough. We don't want any more of this. It's got to stop.
So I know that Napa has, I can't remember, 43, I think is the number, licensed vacation rentals. And when they began enforcing, which I know there's still some Airbnb people out there that are not licensed, but it seemed to kind of quell the problem. And I'm not sure what's going on over in Sonoma County, but I believe that it is officially illegal to have short-term rentals in Sonoma County as well.
In the city of Sonoma.
Oh, just the city.
In county, it's unfortunately, it's quite legal.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Okay. And I take it you are outside the Sonoma city limits.
I am one block over the county line. Yes.
Maybe you could petition the city to move.
Believe me, we have tried. If you're listening.
But
I think it's a community driven issue, right? On a
exactly.
macro scale, you gotta think it's not about David's yard. It's whether there's enough housing to go around. And I'm not a big intervention guy, but I think until we find a solution to create enough houses for the people who live here, work here, it's normal that that businesses like this encounter a lot of local resistance, because like we haven't figured out houses for our people. Mm-hmm. And you're already divvying up houses to open up opportunities for more vacation renters. Like you're gonna raise some hackles,
right? Right. Well, and especially it seems that when you read their promotional literature, is that, you know, they're doing the Lord's work in making sure that yes, you can get a luxury second home. Every American, it's their due right to get that second level luxury home, and it's just absurd. You know, again, help us find single homes for single families first, and then let's talk about second homes. You know, that's where the problem is.
Right.
And again, the more that they operate, the more homes they consume, the less there is available for other folks.
So do you think that having the homes sit empty is a problem?
Well, I think that's a false problem. And I think it's something that, you know, Picasso uses. They say, well, there's all these houses that are sitting empty.
That are single.
That are single, exactly.
Yeah, and people come for 30 days the entire year.
And it's a false problem. You know, the first of all is we have no idea how many houses, quote unquote, sit empty. The notion that this is a huge issue is simply something that they use as part of their promotional material to say, we're solving that problem, right? Well, it's not a problem. Secondarily, many of the owners of these second houses are there for multiple months at a time, unlike Picasso, tenants who are there for a limited 2-week intervals. Some of these people are there for 6 months at a given time, and more importantly, are very actively involved in their community. They're involved in philanthropic groups. They're involved in their churches. They're involved in the local communities. So you can't say this is a problem. And then third, the challenge is this creates, the Picasso model creates a whole additional class of second home occupiers. So it's not just that the people who have these homes that are sitting empty are going to say, oh, wait a second, they're sitting empty. Let's sell it to Picasso and they can then take these and get 8 people sitting them. No, those houses are still staying empty. The issue is they're now taking additional houses, taking them off the market for single families and making them available as timeshares, right? So now you have 2 classes of houses that are used in part-time that are effectively out of reach for a homeowner. And, you know, what we see now, especially with many of these houses, they're having trouble selling the shares and getting the shares sold within these houses. And guess what? They're sitting empty too. So the whole point that this is a problem is completely semantics. It is just a false issue.
Interesting. I didn't know that they're having problems selling. Mm-hmm. They're certainly not having any problems acquiring.
Well, yes and no. You know, it's interesting because part of the issue is we've asked them many, many times, how many have you sold? How many have you bought? How many shares have you actually sold? All we hear from them is what their website interactions are. And, you know, a 200% increase on websites, well, guess what? You get bad press, that drives web hits. You're mentioned on Vice, that drives web hits. You're going to NPR, that drives web hits. All of these things increase web action. But when you actually look at their site, how many houses they own versus how many houses are prospective. Prospective just means they've pulled the graphic from the MLS and they say when enough people write to us and say, we want that house, then they'll go and buy it, right? So it's a prospective Picasso. It's very different. So the number of houses, if you actually look on their site that they own, is de minimis compared to those that they are prospective. And again, considering that they're a quote unquote unicorn, it behooves them to start telling us, how many houses do you own? How many shares have you sold? Again, as if I was an investor, I would certainly want to know in terms of the overall health of their company. Right now, I'm not seeing any revenue figures. All I'm seeing is, you know, yep, we've had 200% increase on our website. Great. You know, buy enough Google ads, you're going to get web traffic.
So when Picasso was a guest on this show, and talk about increase in web hits, mm-hmm. what we're doing right now, I mean, come on. I mean, we're probably going to break their website right now, right? For a guy that's on the radio for an hour a week, mm-hmm. I mean, you know. One of the things that they said is that people that want to buy a home here that can't afford a $3 million home, mm-hmm. they can't afford $800,000, and so that since the median home price in Napa is about $850,000, mm-hmm. they're doing a favor by taking eight people at $850,000 out of the market so that $850,000 house can be sold to a full-time resident living and working here in Napa.
See, but again, it's a false problem because for those individuals that have, you know, $850,000 to spend on a house, number one, those same people would just as soon as spend, you know, fractions of that money on an Airbnb vacation for much less, be able to get the house, you know, of their dreams and be able to do it in 2 week intervals. When you look at the terms where you're limited to 42 days out of a year, plus you have a 2 week limitation, that's the maximum that you can spend. What are you really buying for your $600,000? And in fact, that $600,000, when you include all of the fees and all the management costs and everything else, it's actually much higher. So to spend that kind of money for that kind of an arrangement, you're much better off financially speaking to just go with a vacation rental. Again, I think the point is that people who are willing to spend that much money on a fractional, the model has not been proven. We don't know. And the fact is that they're having difficulty selling shares. They're having difficulty buying, you know, houses in these neighborhoods because of the issues they raise. So we don't know what, you know, their business model truly is and what the impact it really has. All we have is their testimony that says people want this. Certainly people want to buy it, right? Buy into it. They have enough venture backers, but you know, venture backers bought into dogfood.com and we all know how well that did. So I don't think it's a particularly viable way of judging it.
Ryan?
I think I like the argument, right? It's a beautifully crafted theory that you prevent displacement by getting these people to buy fractions instead of single family homes. And I at other times, in other examples, I'll talk about the yuppie fish tank too. Like it's kind of like a trap you build. They're luxury condos. You get people to buy those instead of buying single family homes in existing like older neighborhoods. Santa Elena is the wrong place to be creating that kind of fish tank. That's the town I'm most familiar with where they've bought stuff. Sonoma County in general has a lot of housing inventory issues too. And I think new construction is a good faith version of that argument. Whenever you see new 501 luxury condos going up, that person can talk about fish tanks. Like they're pulling the money out of the system and creating luxury vacation rental or fractionals or whatever you want to call it. But this, you know, it doesn't pass the sniff test in the same way unless they're going to actually go out and do some construction or some deed restricting, in my opinion.
Okay, so we've established a pretty solid foundation as to what is wrong with Picasso. Again, I'm neutral, so mm-hmm. I'm saying what you have said. What do we do about free enterprise? And if they are having trouble selling, might the problem resolve itself because it turns out that it's not as profitable as they anticipated that it be? And if it does turn around and they start selling like hotcakes, how do we legislate against it when there's never been anything like this before? So we can be opposed, we can jump up and down, and we can talk on the radio, but how do we really enforce restrictions when this is a completely new problem.
Sure. And you know what I would suggest is it's actually not a new problem, right? When you look at the issues that are occurring now in Santa Elena, you know, they're being sued because they had in their civic charter that they do not allow timeshares. This is a timeshare model, right? In the city of Sonoma as well, as we said, there is no partial ownership, there's no fractional ownership, there's no vacation rentals, there is none of the transient occupancy allowed within the city limits of Sonoma.
So then it comes down to the definition of timeshare.
Exactly. It's a definition of, you know, again, of transient occupancy and what that means in terms of legislation. And so we, you know, very strongly believe that if you are in a scenario where there is transient occupancy of a residence, there are neighborhoods where it is acceptable. There are neighborhoods where it is not. And again, in family, you know, long established neighborhoods of single family homes, it's simply not the appropriate place for a commercial enterprise, which is what, you know, Picasso is. If you're in, you know, a highly touristed, you know, hotel zone where you have people going in and out, sure. You know, it's the neighborhood in that case is predicated on transient occupancy. You have multiple hotels, you have, you know, multiple vacation condos, et cetera. It's appropriate for the neighborhood. And that's what we would encourage, you know, again, our supervisors to begin looking into. What are the current statutes? What are we doing vis-a-vis transient occupancy? And enforce them. And, you know, for those companies that are making money in transient occupancy schemes, great. Limit them to those neighborhoods that can sustain that kind of activity.
So Picasso's agreement that, okay, when we bought the home in Bel Air, big, big mistake. But if we limit our acquisitions to over $2 million in the more rural areas, does that satisfy things?
Well, I think, again, the question is, what do the neighbors want in those neighborhoods? You know, what is what do they want in terms of, you know, mini hotels in their area? I think, you know, again, pricing in the Bay Area and particularly in the North Bay is simply not a good indicator in terms of what's an acceptable house versus what's not. As we know, you know, the challenge is a modest, you know, regular house in Sonoma or Napa, you know, costs in the $1 million range. You put a little flip on it, put a little lipstick on it, it's now up to $2.5 million for no other reason than the fact that you've put in a Wolf Range and a little bit of marble. I mean, that's what it boils down to.
But less than a minute, but go ahead, Ryan.
I think you're right on, though. If they're willing to start thinking about solutions like that and working with the local communities that David's telling, hey, it's either the carrot or the stick, man, and the community's going to work on the stick. Carrots, let's talk, because there are ways to show that they are willing to reinvest in the community.
Yeah. And man, I cannot believe how fast that went. One of the other things that people talk about is the property tax issue. They're not generating as much property tax because when a fraction sells, it doesn't necessitate a new assessment. So one of the suggestions that I had, and I actually told Austin, the CEO of Picasso, when I met him, is how about to quell some of the pitchforks and whatnot, that any Picasso property pays a 3x of property tax, and then the county can set aside those funds for affordable housing. And he actually said, that's not a bad idea.
Sure.
And then it turned out that they were doing like a $20,000 donation to a nonprofit, and we are running so late. But David is going to stick around, and we'll be right back.
Thank you,
with Lee. More conversation.
Are you thinking about purchasing a home? The top qualities a buyer looks for in a realtor are honesty and integrity, along with thorough knowledge of the purchasing process. You'll get all that and more with Lee W. Miller. His instincts and experience were invaluable. Lee was also a certified life coach, giving him a significant edge as an effective communicator. Whether you want to buy or sell, or just have some questions, remember LeeWMiller.com for your best representation.
You will love the staff at Abide Napa Cannabis Dispensary, now open in Napa. The Abide staff's understanding of the medical properties of cannabis enable them to expertly consult patients to the optimum recommendation, free of any intimidation. Their mission is simple: provide patients with the highest quality cannabis products at a fair price. Visit AbideNapa.com or call their experts at 707-266-1967. That's 266-1967. Cannabis expertise, way different than the year 1967.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
Change is never easy, but most change has the potential to bring about huge innovation. And for the real estate industry, other than the use of the internet and about 10 times the amount of forms filed, the way brokerages operate hasn't changed much at all in the last 50 years. Until now. Q Avenue 8, a real estate brokerage built for the modern world. Whether you're an agent or a client, it's time to experience a brokerage that makes real estate simple, seamless, and built for people. Avenue 8 is a thoughtfully designed brokerage designed to equip and empower agents with the technology and tools they need to be effective and successful in their careers, ultimately bringing superior results to the home buyers and sellers. I'm happy to put you in touch with the right folks at Avenue 8. Check out LeeWMiller.com or 707-266-1585.
KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.
Broadcasting live from South Napa Century Center.
And just like that, we are back. That was David Applebaum. StopPicassoNow.org is the website if you want to learn a little bit more about that. And David is going to be sticking around with us while we talk about ADUs, and he'll keep us in, kind of like Ryan did. David, if someone wants to get in touch with you, how might they do that if they don't want to reach me? Which I always tell people, you can always just contact me, 707-266-1585. If you want to bypass this talkative guy here and go straight to the source, David Applebaum, you can reach him.
You can definitely either get me through the Stop Picasso Now site or on Nextdoor for Sonoma. Okay. Best way to get me.
All right. Well, now we're going to shift just a little bit because we're still talking about housing, and Ryan is going to enlighten us.
That's it. I'm not just going to cede my time to 30 more minutes of Picasso.
You're a great guy, but you're not that great of a guy.
Thanks for having me on. It's really, I love talking about housing, so it's great that we got to spend half a segment on
it. It's sometimes that just works out great that the two topics are hand in glove.
Yeah. And I think the thing I'm working on is accessory dwelling units and backyard cottages, some of the new stuff around SB9, which we'll talk about. But If you have any questions or curiosity about how people can develop these backyard casitas or create a little extra space for themselves or their family, then that's what my business is all about. And I also work for an architecture firm called Inspired ADUs that specializes in the design of those backyard cottages and with a focus on aging in place and accessibility. So that's my shtick now.
Okay. And you're a young guy to be helping out people with aging dwellings.
That's it. But I have some access issues too sometimes when I'm reaching to the top shelf for the cookie jar. You know, I think the thing that drew me to ADUs and backyard cottages and all of these alternatives.
Granny units, all the different terms over the years. But now we kind of have this universal term, ADU, accessory dwelling unit, and that helps a lot.
Exactly. And it just rolls off the tongue, right? Yeah. Accessory dwelling unit. No, yeah. but I think it's fascinating to me because housing is a really controversial issue. We've just spent a bit of time talking about that with another company in this area. And what strikes me about ADUs is that they become more individual development projects. You know, 80% of my customers are doing it for themselves, not to rent out. They're doing it for a family member. Yeah.
And if they do rent it out, it's not short term. It has to be longer than 30 days.
That's right. And it's, you know, they're often looking for a specific type of renter. They have to learn all the Fair Housing Act stuff so that they don't discriminate. But they're looking for like the legendary traveling nurse or a caretaker or somebody who can take care of their kids while they're at work. Back when we used to leave the house to work. And like that's the kind of thing that's like it's so well suited and surgical and in its approach that I often see people who are generally opposed to new changes in their neighborhood, who we colloquially call NIMBYs. And normally they're like, not in my backyard. But they hear about ADUs and they're like, well, if I did it really tastefully, maybe in my backyard. Right. And I'm like, yeah, now we're talking. We're bridging this gap and creating some housing.
So you've created a new term, MIMBY. maybe in my backyard. And then, of course, there's the YIMBYs.
Mm-hmm. Of which I belong unabashedly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. That's right.
So why don't we just real quickly, what types of people should be thinking about an ADU?
It's such a versatile tool that that's a very hard question to answer. You know, the people I love helping the most are... they're planning their forever home, right? And they might live on a split level, three-story house that they don't like navigating anymore.
The tri-levels out in Browns Valley, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then they're thinking, okay, so I could build a nice 800 square foot forever home in my backyard, designed for my lifestyle now and for the couple decades. I could travel around the world. It's like a little base camp for me. And I rent out the primary, or I have a kid move back in who can't afford to come back to California anymore. Those customers, every house becomes a good story. The ADU is giving them a place to age gracefully and in an inspired way. The primary house gets filled by a young family that wouldn't be able to live in California if it weren't for a somewhat affluent backyard owner. And then at some point, three, 4 decades down the road, the housing shifts in use again. And maybe a young kid from the front house can move into the backyard unit and start their young adult life as a single adult. So those kind of, whenever a client sits down and wants to talk about decades with me, then I'm like, yes. So if you're planning, if you're thinking about that and you're like, how are my kids gonna afford to live in this state? How am I going to afford to live in my neighborhood? This is for you. And the financial products aren't always there. That market's still developing, so it pays to have some equity in your house to make this project possible. But start thinking about it now, because rules like SB 9 also create some new finance options where you could do a lot, and you can really stay in your home, stay in your community. That's what it's for.
Ryan O'Connell, howtoadu.com. Ryan, give us a 45-second SB 9 overview.
Okay. All right. SB 9 is a complicated law. It's got two parts. One, if you can build a single-family house on a lot, now you can build two. The other part is that under certain conditions, you can split the lot, and you could build potentially two units on each lot if you combine those. Oh. There's a lot of exceptions. You know, you can't do it in historic neighborhoods, in fire zones, in non-urban areas where this is for infill. So there's lots of exceptions. You should check out my website. but broadly, millions of people can now build two houses where they only had one before, and some of them might be able to build four if that's right for their lot. You could also really shoot yourself in the foot if you split your lot in a funny way and create, you know, you lose more value than you create. So don't think everybody in your neighborhood should do fours, but right. Hey, let's chat.
Yeah. So, if somebody wants to build an ADU, mm-hmm. Can't they go down to the city and do that? Mm-hmm. What's the advantage of them leveraging your expertise?
Yeah. So I think that a lot of people accomplish this successfully on their own with a tiny bit of help. And that's why almost all of my business is geared toward free content. You go to the YouTube channel, you go to the website, and you can self-serve, because I basically answer the same questions 80% of the time. So I make videos, I write posts, and you can learn the basics. And that gets you down the street to your planning department, and hopefully they're really helpful. There's some cases where people really need extra help because the law gets complicated and every jurisdiction enforces them a little differently. There's also some cases where you've got an embarrassment of options. And if if you looking at it, for example, and you say, should I be doing a detached new ADU or converting part of my existing house, or should I be using this lot split law Ryan just talked about? You wanna have a strategy, and if it's worth it, talk to a professional, whether it's me or somebody else, right? And you just get all your options on the table so you make an informed choice before you start going down to the planning department. But that said, a lot of free resources too. At Napa, Sonoma, you hit the Napa Sonoma EDU Center. They're funded by nonprofits like the NDCF and other nonprofits, and it's a great resource. It's absolutely free. And I'm all about that. Like if you can self-serve for free, you don't need me. But when you need plans, come to Inspired. And when you need a little bit of strategy and a little bit of help, my phone number is in like every video. I'm 707-363-8443. Shoot me a text first so I know you're not a robot.
Well, we will repeat that number as well. And just to let everybody know, SB 9 is that was implemented and signed by the governor. So that's not, that is a statewide bill. That's not neighborhood by neighborhood or even county by county.
Yeah. So just like the ADU laws, the Senate gave a lot of time to the local municipalities to get in line with housing. And because the local jurisdictions haven't kept up with their housing allocations, not to get too wonky, the state has said, all right, we're going to start passing laws that are statewide. And sometimes that causes a little bit of confusion, which is another job security for Ryan. Right. But yeah, SB9 is one of those at the state level, and it's got a bunch of carve outs. But broadly, it's allowing millions of single family zoned lots to build two or four times as much single family housing on that lot.
And if our listeners are not aware, the governor has mandated county by county, which gets broken down city by city, the mandatory new housing that must be built by, I think it's 2031.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What number is that for Napa?
Oof, you're going to put me on the spot. Sorry. I'm not sure what the arenas look like, that number looks like for Napa right now. It's relatively punchy. It's punchy for a county.
Right.
For
I don't
county
remember the
size.
Number either. And I didn't mean to put you on the spot. But I know that it's a lofty goal, to say the least.
Yeah.
And having ADUs count toward that total is a huge way to actually achieve that.
That's right. And I think Napa is a great example. Sonoma, too, is a great example of good faith communities where they put together a housing plan, a housing element, and they'll say what percentage of their allocation they think they're going to hit with developments like ADUs. And if you claim you're going to have a lot of ADUs, then you better put some resources behind educating the public and communicating and staffing up your planning department. And those counties and cities have done that. And that's really great. You do see some bad faith efforts for cities I will not give press to right now, where they say they're going to build 1,000 ADUs a year. And it's like, you built 12 last year.
Right.
What's going to change?
It sounds like a pitch on Shark Tank as to evaluation.
Yeah. And you know, you see, they try everything in the book. They'll say they're going to develop six-floor residential on the cemetery that they're going to convert City Hall into a luxury condo. And it's like, guys, come on, at least put in the effort here.
Right. You know, and I think you're being a little bit modest. Yeah, they can go do it themselves, so on and so forth. But I think, and I know that this isn't a tactic of yours. Oh, go ahead, try it yourself. You'll be back. You'll be calling me. But it is pretty complicated, and there's so many variables. And if they make that wrong decision, it could cost them a fortune, or they could just end up with something that's like, oh man, we totally blew it. We should have done X instead of Y or whatever.
Here's what I will say. A lot of people say owner builder. A lot of people have never built a house before and they go, I could do this cheap. I could do owner builder. And it is a legal ability you have, but it is very unwise to try to do some like a career job, like be a GC, if you don't have any experience, and you could lose a lot more money than you save. And so if you're going to do that, then hopefully you've already got some experience. And then also you should get some online courses that I don't provide, but other GCs do. Buy a book. Like, I have links on the website for that stuff. If you're not willing to put in hours and hours to learn a little bit and a few hundred bucks to learn a little bit at the front, that is a good sign that you are not going to be a good owner builder.
Right.
Because it takes time, it takes investment and money. And that's really dangerous. It breaks my heart to see some of the families that go into it, spend tens of thousands of dollars and never finish their project. Because they've lost housing security, and that, right. and that's on all of us, right? Like, so, right. So that's the one I would steer clear from. It without a lot of confidence and experience, you should not go down that road, in my opinion. Yeah.
Well, and there are those of us, I put myself and my son, the top of the list, that recognize you do what you do best, and it serves you well. I choose not to change my own oil anymore. I did in high school. I theoretically could do it, probably a lot more difficult on today's vehicles. But the point is, the 2 hours that it would take me to do that is far better me working. Yeah. Even if I'm working while my oil is being changed in 20 minutes somewhere else. And so it's on a much bigger scale, what we're talking about for this.
And the classic example is like, there's the part that people think is being a GC is like getting a bunch of bids from subs and right. giving them jobs. And like that part's
easy. And choosing the colors.
That's right. Yeah. it's time consuming, but it's feasible. The part that's hard is when, and I don't want to say everybody's like this, but you know, on a long enough job, something's going to happen that goes a little bit wrong, or an inspector is going to come through and say, why is this done this way? And one sub is going to say like, oh, I did that because the other sub did this. And that sub's going to be like, I did that because the other guy did this.
And a bunch of finger pointing.
And the job of a general contractor, amongst other things, is to manage all of those trades so that they get to the finished project with a minimal amount of finger pointing. Right. And so that's one example of like, nobody talks about this when they're saying like, oh, just do it owner builder. And like, man, you can lose a lot of money and time. But yeah, that's a rant. That's my soapbox.
So I'm not giving you permission. I am pleading with you to not be so humble and share with us, Ryan O'Connell, howtoadu.com. What is the service that you will provide and why is it so important?
Yeah, so I do consulting services where people will say, Ryan, I really need some help. Like it's, I tried emailing the planning department and actually they're new to this whole ADU thing. I'm like the third one that's getting built and they have as many questions as I do. And I can come in and say like, well, look, you're getting a lot of conflicting advice about how big you can go. This is how big you can go on your lot. You're getting a lot of conflicting advice about design review. This is what can happen. And then like I said, it's a consulting thing. So you pay a retainer and an hourly rate, and we make sure we get your project done. And that's kind of the broadest way to use me. But I'm humble out of necessity. I think a lot of people in this space come in and they say, I know everything, or the system is really simple. And what I promise to do, if you're one of my clients, is to say, the system is complicated, and I am going to fight for you to do my best to get your project done in a way that gives you your goals, that delivers you your goals.
It's kind of like a little bit of an insurance policy.
A lot of people use me that way.
Okay.
And it's, you know, in a lot of ways I've modeled what realtors do for their clients. I've modeled, I'm not a financial planner. I'm not licensed for that, but I've looked at a lot of what gets done in kind of planning and strategy so that I can point people to the right professionals when the time comes. And it really helps. You never know where the surprises come in. You know, just last week, somebody came to me with a deed restriction that their city had sent them, said, okay, you're done with your ADU, sign this deed restriction. And they said, this looks fishy. And they sent it over to me and I said, oh yeah, they're asking you for an owner occupancy requirement. That's completely unenforceable. It is not legal to ask you for that. Do not sign that deed restriction. Send them a polite letter asking what's up with that. And he sends them the polite letter and they go, oh, sorry, intern sent you the wrong deed restriction. Yeah, I
wow.
bet. The intern's been sending 600 people the wrong deed restriction in that town. But like, so that you do see stuff like that on a regular basis.
So much for SB9 making making it uniform across the, yeah. You know, and then each individual... So you think there was a malicious intent there, not admin error.
You know, sometimes it's admin and sometimes it's intentional. And on this one, don't blame the intern guy. Like, right. You know, don't blame me. It's never a good look to blame the intern.
So what would be the difference if they had signed that?
They would be forced to live in one of the units.
They wouldn't be able to rent it out.
Until they sold the whole property, and then whoever bought it would have to live in one of the... Like, it's crazy. It's just not an enforceable deed restriction. If you build a junior accessory dwelling unit, which is a second type of dwelling, then the city can ask you for an owner occupancy requirement. And actually, on the lot splits under SB 9, there's a 3-year affidavit owner occupancy of one of the units. So there's examples where it's possible. This was not one of them.
Right.
And yeah, it's just outrageous what cities are trying to get away with sometimes. There's mostly good actors. But there's a couple that I like to pick on.
All right. What haven't we discussed yet that you want to be sure that our listeners learn.
Part of my journey in housing, which has been, I got into this about a year and a half ago, right? I was a wine guy before. I used to work at the office right above where we're DJing from. And I think an important part is humility and learning and talking to other people in the space. And what I've seen in the first kind of couple of years of doing this is that there are people who've devoted their entire careers to creating better housing in this state. And you want to find those people and spend as much time with them and learn from them as much as you can. Even if it's just your house, even if it's just your community, you can tell if somebody's doing it for a buck or doing it for the town or for the community. And so you can't see me unless you're on my TikTok, but I'm wearing an Inspired ADUs hat. I love working with Carrie and Josh there. They're really talented architects who've spent a lifetime doing this. And there's so many other characters like them. So people always ask me, like, what GC should I use? Get a neighbor to refer you a contractor. More importantly, start plugging into the housing subjects and topics in your community, because it's bigger than just your ADU. And people who really care are also going to be good tradespeople for you.
Sure. So there's probably people listening that do not own a house. Mm-hmm, so if they don't own a house, why should they care anything about ADUs?
That's it. Well, this is what's going to lower rent for everybody.
Supply and demand.
Yeah, that's it. We have a market where the supply has been constrained artificially by our politics, not like partisan politics, just like that's how California grew up.
Right.
And it's time to change that. The state is giving us a lot of blanket policies, which we should use judiciously and be careful that we don't abuse them or overuse them in ways that deteriorate neighborhoods or displace communities. And then local government can give us even better tools. So if you're a renter and you're sick of how high the rent is, you should learn all this stuff that people think is just for homeowners, because you have more power than you know. You can educate, you can attend city councils, you can learn, watch channels like mine and figure out where you can plug into your community, who you can talk to in your family, your friends, your boss. Where can we put more housing to stop the rent from getting even higher? That's what I'd say.
So when David was talking about the ADU thing, kind of came up a little bit there. So imagine every single home in Browns Valley put an ADU. I know it's not possible physically, the lot, the dimensions and everything else, but and all of those homes in Browns Valley became rentals and the owners were living in the ADUs. Would that be a negative impact?
So in that example, which has a lot of ifs, right? But in that example, you're increasing the housing inventory, right? So the owners are all creating more supply with the front rental, and they're moving themselves to the back. So overall, rent price should go down and housing inventory should go up, and it's a good thing. There's a lot of questions about that. And one of the things I love about ADUs is that they're case by case, right? I don't have to go to a town and be like, please approve 400 ADUs this year. Instead, each homeowner gets to go, does my street have enough parking? Like, does my driveway accommodate a second driveway to access the backyard? And if it doesn't, don't be a bonehead. Like, it's your house. It's your biggest asset. Don't mess it up. But like a lot of the time you'll find, oh man, I have a corner lot. I could have a completely separate entrance, or like, actually, there's a really big side path between this neighbor and that neighbor. I maybe we should think about this. And that's one of the things I love about them. They're very free market, deregulated kind of way for self-interested homeowners to start fixing the problem that we have unintentionally caused.
Right.
Does that answer the question?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and more importantly, just to chime in, is that, you know, if the owner is occupying it, it's in their interest to make sure that it's clean, that it's comfortable, that the neighborhood is peaceful and harmonious, and, you know, they live there as well. So we applaud that kind of activity.
That's it. It takes away a lot of the fears that we have about external developers or the King of Jordan or whatever buying houses in your neighborhood.
Right.
Sorry, Pandora Papers reference. I don't know if everybody's up on the news, but yeah, hopefully it's a way to develop our communities that's really wholesome. That's right. My hope.
Yeah,
I'm working hard for it, man.
And we own a duplex, mm-hmm. and previously we were not allowed to add an ADU because there's already two dwellings on mm-hmm. that one parcel. And now, legally, we can. Legally two, but realistically, probably just one. But yeah, that I'm all excited to do that. Mm-hmm. But of course, it's still going to cost well over $100,000.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The floor on even a small ADU, that's a really important subject. It's like, these are expensive. Bayer construction costs are wild right now. Labor's expensive.
Materials are out of sight.
Yeah, materials drive it too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not to mention, you just can't even get a refrigerator or a dishwasher for months.
That's all true. So what I would say is, like, the floor. We just did a charity ADU in Santa Rosa, garage conversion with the living room, and it's a couple miles from Coffee Park. It's transitional housing, so a lot of things are donated so that they can shelter these shelterless moms and their kids. And even with plans 100% donated, materials at cost, labor, a lot of it donated, they did a full garage conversion of 500 square feet, cost them over $100,000.
Wow.
So with tons donated. So, you know, maybe there's a floor of like 150 if you're really savvy, but like realistically, it's not a cheap project. What you want to do is make sure you have the cash for the kind of average cost. On our 414 square foot unit, which is very popular and inspired, that one, the average quotes we get for construction costs this in 2021 have been between $280,000 and $300,000.
Wow.
We've got a lot of data that's real, so it's just a helpful place to start the conversation. Don't start the project if you don't have the money to finish. You could take equity out of your house to get it done. You could do a lot, but don't do it if you don't have the cash.
Right.
And then I know it seems expensive, but think about the value that you're creating and just judge it against other opportunities. And you know, would you be able to access this money if it was some other kind of project, or not? And,
right.
and then that's how you think about these investments.
Right.
Another reason people use me.
Right. David Applebaum, Stop Picasso Now, and Ryan O'Connell from howtoadu.com. Gentlemen, both, thank you very much for being here. Thank you for just being engaged in your community and, you know, contributing how you do. Remember to live each day of your life as if your legacy matters.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.
Broadcasting live from South Napa Century Center.